This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
This is Amtower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Every week, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. Amtower Off-Center with your host, Mark Amtower.
Welcome to our no-holds-barred forum for discussing what's good, bad, ugly, and just plain silly in the arena of doing business with the government. I'm Mark Amtower. My guest today is Trey Hodgkins. He's the Senior Vice President for the Global Public Sector at Tech America. You can find them at techamerica.org. Trey, welcome to the show.
Good afternoon, and thanks for having me.
Pleasure to have you. Let's start off by telling, you know, maybe the five people listening who don't know Tech America, what Tech America is, what it does, and who your members are.
Well, Tech America is a trade association, and our focus has been on the tech sector, the ICT sector, to be specific. And we focus in my specific portfolio is around companies selling to the public sector market, the state and local and federal marketplaces, and we're also looking at expanding into the global market, thus the global public sector piece of my title.
Okay. So what exactly do you do with and for the companies, and then we can get into maybe some areas of concern for them?
Sure. We the public sector here at Tech America is been around for quite some time now. It was started and developed into a robust program by my mentor and predecessor, Olga Gerkovats. Olga has resigned and gone off to determine if she wants to really be retired. And I've been honored to try and fill in behind her and keep the program going. And I am doing that by focusing on the traditional areas we've always focused on, state and local government marketplace, and then four portfolios at the federal level, Homeland Security and federal law enforcement, the national security community, the federal civilian marketplace, and then we have a fifth group that focuses in on all the procurement policy that is impacting contractors, legislation and regulation that's out there that we need to engage on their behalf.
I think maybe we'll get into that a little later on in the show. I ran across Olga the first time somewhere around 94 when we were both on an advisory committee at the National Academy of Public Administration. You know, she was a power to behold then, and she's been wonderful to know the last almost 20 years. So I am sorry to see her go from Tech America, but I'll be surprised if she doesn't come back in sometime in 13 just to add her two cents. You know, maybe I'll just get her to come in and do my show with me. I mean, I'll get her in here somehow.
That would be a great way to have her candidly discuss some of these issues.
Well,
she's certainly an institution in the community.
Yeah, but you know, there's something about Olga that's so proper that, you know, some people when they leave government get a little more candid. When they leave another association, they get a little more candid. There's something about Olga that just goes up to a certain line and doesn't cross.
True.
I write a lot, and sometimes I get a little edgy. So one of my jobs that I tasked Olga with a while ago was to monitor me and tell me when I went over the edge. So she used to send me quite a few notes. So, let's talk a little more about some things that are going on at Tech America. I know you got a couple of conferences coming up soon.
We do. Actually, our big conference later this month, slated for the October the 17th and the 18th, is our annual vision budget forecast, where our member companies have been participating on teams that are organized around the different market units within either the federal civilian side or in the defense side. And those teams have done some very in-depth analysis the landscape, the budget forecast landscape, including all the ramifications of the fiscal cliff issues, and in particular sequestration, and what does it mean in those markets. And those results will be presented for companies and other interested parties that want to see the information. They have a strategic vision of the forecast, the budget, and where it's going. What are the options for government? Certainly at that point in time, we won't know what's going to happen in a lame duck and how that might impact, you know, where our budget line, what the budget trends may be. But that information is putting the finishing touches on it, and we'll be presenting it on the 17th and the 18th. The 17th is the federal IT day, the civilian side, and then the 18th is the defense day. So if someone's interested, they can look on our website, techamericafoundation.org, and find out how to participate and get registered.
Okay. And you have the same event in November for the West Coast, but oddly enough, that's 2 days after the election, so maybe there'll be a slightly different take on it at that time.
That's correct. We take what's done in the 2 days, distill that down, and have a one-day presentation we do on the West Coast. And, you know, we offer it out there for folks that are in San Diego or San Francisco or in Silicon Valley. They're interested in understanding where the government market might go. And there are some elements of the presentation that talk about scenarios based on who wins, who would be the winners, who would be the losers, and what the how the landscape would change. So those pieces will probably be updated based on the timing, and people will get a sense of what the group forecasts based on, presumably, the knowledge we'll all have at that point about who won.
Well, yeah, I mean, hopefully that will be decided then. There'll be no Chad issues and other untoward activity.
Let's hope.
I mean,
the other thing that I think your listeners would be interested in that we're putting together will be a panel discussion on the potential impact of sequestration on the non-defense agencies. As you have reported and others have reported for some time now, we've got taken quite substantial in-depth looks at what it means for DOD, and it's certainly been the most vocal administration element in the conversation. But there's been less visibility and less transparency around what's going to happen on the civilian side, and we thought we'd try and take a deeper dive into that, help companies understand and help contractors get a better sense of what to expect from their customers, what kind of behavior they can anticipate from their customers, and you know, what steps they can take as vendors to try and make sure that as best they can protect their business with the government.
Okay, let's talk for a minute about the membership makeup of Tech America. Who are who's your audience?
Well, they range. I mean, characterizing them, they are you know, technology, hardware, and software developers and providers, and then both integrators and services providers related to technology, and either it's integration or building systems and the services related to putting those together and operating them for the government, in my case. Certainly the elements of companies facing the public sector are the ones I work with. The organization as a whole represents on the commercial side and in an international basis those same companies. We have an office in Brussels. We have representation in Beijing, and have counterparts here in D.C. that lobby other issues like tax, international trade. We have a robust export control focus. Privacy, intellectual property are some of the other areas that we work on. And, of course, cybersecurity is one that spans the entire technology community, and we've structured ourselves to focus on that issue in the same way. So there's a lot of issues we work on, and the companies we represent are those companies that are engaging with the federal government as a customer for those products, and then the ones that you see on the shelf in a Best Buy or another retail outlet of that sort.
Okay. So once upon a time, and maybe it still is, Tech America had relationships with Lord knows how many regional tech councils throughout the country. Is that still the case?
Well, what we've done since March, we've had a new CEO. And one of the things that he was specifically brought on by the board to do is look at our business model, understand what our sweet spots are, make sure that we are focusing our resources on the things that our members want us to focus on, and then realign the organization to that. In the course of doing that analysis, we found that we were not necessarily delivering what our members wanted, and we were diluting our focus with many of the regional activities we had. And as a result of that, the regional presence that we had is in the old format is dissolved. What we have now is a focus in five regions around the country, and those entities are looking at lobbying activities in the state capitals in those regions. So our shift is away from some of the other things we used to do in a regional area around two different member service models that we have. The first is on public policy and advocacy, and the second is around business and networking intelligence. So the organization was, we went through, we did, our new CEO did a scrub from top to bottom with the board, and we were looking for things that fit into those two service models. And the things that did not fit were the things that we have either dissolved or a few things we are looking at moving to other entities to continue the activity as they're of interest to our members, but they don't fit into our sweet spot anymore. And the idea is to refocus back around what our members really want us to do, and that's the public policy activity and then the networking and intelligence.
Great. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'll be back with Trey Hodgkins of Tech America after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest today is Trey Hodgkins. Trey is the Senior Vice President for the Global Public Sector at Tech America. You can find them at techamerica.org. The Vision Conference is coming up October 17 and 18 in Virginia. And the shorter version is immediately after the election on November 8th. Where on in the West Coast is that going to be, Trey?
In San Diego.
San Diego. Okay, that should be a nice time to be there. So, big issues facing the government contracting community. I mean, we live seemingly with a continuing resolution. Thankfully, this one was passed, relatively painlessly before the deadline, but it's still a CR. And on top of that, we have sequestration. What does this mean for doing business with the government for IT companies?
Well, in the near term, there's some degree of certainty. We have a continuing resolution. So at least the customer knows their funding levels as they start the fiscal year. The challenge, Mark, is that it gets us back into that what was becoming an almost annual mechanism for funding in the CR, which means we have the limitations on new starts, and we have the customer behaving in ways they would not normally behave if they had had full appropriations. They don't obligate funds the same way. They are unable to obligate funds in some ways. And so we start the year with those limitations on what we can do. Someone joked around the beginning of the fiscal year about how who thought we'd ever reach a point when we laughed and said this getting a CR is a good thing. But that is sort of where we are at this point. Unfortunately, the horizon, the end of the year, to be specific, is when all this changes. And I think the underlying element that's important for everyone to know is that there really isn't any certainty about funding. We start the fiscal year with FY 12 dollar limitations with some plus ups in some areas. Cybersecurity, for example, the disaster relief got a little bit more money. But then when we get to December, the end of the year, sequestration is, if nothing has changed, will take effect on January the 2nd. at that point, it's going to occur 3 months into a six-month CR, and it will be imposed in the 9 months that are left in FY13. So you have some compressed activities around what funds are available now in the first quarter of the fiscal year. Those funds were allocated by Congress to be available for the first 6 months, but they won't be. Sequestration is going to change that equation. And then whatever the cuts will be and whatever they'll look like will be compressed in the last 9 months of FY13. So, and how all that's going to work, at best it's going to be like a roller coaster, I would presume, for both the customers and, you know, how they react to the different fiscal requirements they're going to be faced with, and the vendors, and understanding what does it mean to their individual contracts. You know, you've started FY13 with a contract, and it's funded ostensibly under a CR, and then those are things that are going to change in 3 months. So all of those changing environments is, and then the uncertainty that comes with where we're going. You know, we know it's changing, but we don't necessarily know with granularity what it's going to look like after the fact. And that's the challenge for everyone, I think, in the coming months. And on top of that, we have the fiscal cliff issues, which are more not necessarily directly linked to contracts, contractors, and their customers, but certainly indirectly going to impact the entire economic window. And what does that look like going forward, and how the Congress, well, whether or not the Congress is able to come to any agreement on addressing those issues, the expirations of the taxes that are out there, the debt limit ceiling, some of the other fiscal cliff issues that are pending. When you roll all those things together with a CR, or in the context of a CR and sequestration cuts, you have a really rocky future for the government and the government contracting community in FY13. And, of course, all these things are going to impact the out years. So it's a very challenging time, and I think it's going to be a very it's going to be unclear for several months what direction we're going to be heading in. Many of my members talk about they don't know what the new normal is going to be, but they're quite certain we're going to have a new normal. And everyone's trying to prepare and read their crystal balls about how do we get there and what is it going to look like as we go.
Well, you know, you drew the analogy to the roller coaster issue. So the new normal may be a perpetual downhill 6G roller coaster.
It's possible.
Not my idea of a good time.
Yeah. Hopefully with a roller coaster, though, you always come back up.
One would hope.
The challenge in this situation is understanding those bigger fiscal cliff issues. And what is that going to mean for the broader economy? You know, we're talking about layoffs in the hundreds of thousands in just the Washington metropolitan area, potentially under, you know, some of the analyses of the sequestration. It would probably bring, again, according to those analyses, bring to the D.C. area the recession in a way that we've not felt thus far. You know, it's certainly been harder. Other parts of the country have been harder hit. They more directly felt some of those impacts, and this area has been largely insulated if you look at the statistical information, and that may change in January. So, again, it's going to be some challenges for everyone, and trying to ascertain that, that's a role Tech America can help, and we certainly hope we're trying to do that and help the member companies understand what the landscape is looking like and let them know as quickly as possible when the landscape is going to change again.
Right, and you know, the election's going to have a heck of a lot to do with that. But regardless of the outcome of the election, you know, Congress's inability to pass a budget and seeming inability to come to any sort of resolution on the sequestration is going to hit. But on that note, Mr. Obama said, you know, that contractors didn't have to send out notices to employees about pending layoffs. And Mr. McCain said, I don't think so. So what impact is that going to have? And is that going to be a loggerhead issue as well?
I think it may well be a loggerhead issue, and it's going to underlie the attempts at partisan, nonpartisan or bipartisan efforts to fix some of those other issues. How do we adjust sequestration perhaps to make the impact on defense less harmful? How do you address the fiscal cliff issues? For those who may not know, there were actually two memos. One memo was signed by Dick Gitlin, the head of the Defense Procurement and Acquisition Policy Office, that said that the costs of renegotiating and implementing the administrative costs that would normally be allowable in normal circumstances, when you renegotiate contracts or even the cost of terminations, that would normally be allowable will also be allowable in the context of sequestration. So companies that are faced with impacts to their contracts will have some allowable costs that they can claim from the government, according to that memorandum and the authorities that it outlines. The other memorandum that was released concurrently with that one is the one by Jack Lew, the head of OMB, and Joe Jordan, the head of the Office of Federal Procurement Policy, is the one that's getting a lot of attention, and you noted Mr. McCain has pushed back on. It says that companies following a Department of Labor memorandum or guidance from early this year should not issue warnings or layoff notices to employees that they may, some of the companies talk about conditional pink slips, but the memorandum spelled out that companies should not issue those notices. And if the company subsequent to that experienced lawsuits for noncompliance with the WARN Act, the underlying labor statute that requires those notices, then the government would, the companies could make claims against the government for those labor costs, the judgments that might come against them, and the legal fees associated with those lawsuits, is the government would, pick up the tab on that. And, of course, what we're seeing now playing out on the political side is the reality is that, number one, funds for those kinds of things have to be appropriated. So if Congress chooses not to put the money in the pot, there's nothing there to pay a judgment with or a claim with. And number two, the government is a sovereign entity, and the government has to decide it was willing to be sued, presuming that that's where it ends up in the courts. So there's a number of procedural and legal hurdles that are faced in that process, and what you're seeing is some of the senators weighing in on the front end. Lindsey Graham has made some comments about this too. And then I think Senator Ayotte and some others have sent some letters to the White House or an OMB asking for greater legal analysis of these interpretations. But at the end of the day, you have the administration saying, don't worry about your compliance with notifying your employees you may lay off as a result of sequestration. In fact, don't do it. And if you face legal action as a result of that, you can make a claim for those costs. All of these things would transpire after the election. And I think, though, that it's interesting the senators, the ones that would be involved in the authorizing and appropriating process, are weighing in now and saying, we're not going to go along with this. So it creates a policy dilemma for a lot of companies. Do you comply with the WARN Act, or do you not comply and hope that your claims will be paid?
Oh, boy. It gets deeper and deeper. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, back after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest today is Trey Hodgkins. Trey is a Senior Vice President for the Global Public Sector at Tech America. You can find them at techamerica.org. You guys have been following the defense bill very closely, and the emails we swapped prior to the show, you get into it quite deeply. What are your concerns here?
Well, as you know, Mark, the defense bill is generally the biggest procurement-related or becomes a vehicle for the biggest piece of procurement-related legislation each year, and this year is no different. we see a whole section in there, and both the House and the Senate versions that impact a number of issues. And there's another whole section addressing some small business provisions that the House Small Business Committee put in that version of the bill. So there's a lot of stuff going on. Right now, the big question is whether or not the Senate will even be able to complete their action on the bill and get the bill ready for conference, and that the conference would be completed under the lame duck coming after the election. The expectation is there's going to be a relatively compressed time frame, and all these things are subject to change. But right now, we're hearing that Congress may try and finish up whatever it's going to do between Election Day and Thanksgiving, and that would be it. But Congress being
that's a short session.
Yeah. But Congress being here, you know, right up to just before Thanksgiving, and then coming right back after that, and coming right up to Christmas, and even into almost the New Year's, is not unheard of. So the pieces we're specifically watching, there's three of them that I think are worth note that are of big interest to our members. One of them is in the House bill, Section 816, which is an effort in the context of avoiding and detecting counterfeit products in the DoD supply chain to create a reasonable mechanism for companies who have adopted what the government prescribes to them to be able to not bear the full cost of remedying a counterfeit. It's modeled after what the Missile Defense Agency is doing now, where they go in with their contractors, they create rigorous processes to test for counterfeits and to weed them out and to prevent it from coming into their supply chain. But the best intentions usually are only good for a day. These counterfeiters are very effective. They're very smart, and they change their protocols and techniques. And what we see is that things that are put in place today are not effective in a month or so, and companies have to adjust, and the government has to adjust. So there are occasional failures. And in those circumstances where the government has outlined a process for companies to follow and the companies have fully adopted those and demonstrated that compliance, we believe that's a shared risk situation. And that's the way we've teed this up in the Section 816, is that it allows the cost of those remedies when the failures occur to be allowable, and the government would share that risk with the companies.
You guys have been following that for a while, though, the counterfeit.
Well, this particular iteration of the subject is one of many steps in the process. It started over 6 years ago with an initial FAR case to try and revise the federal acquisition regulations, and that has evolved. There's currently activity OMB, and its latest legislative attempt was, or successful attempt, was Section 818 of the defense bill from last year. What that says is that the Department of Defense will create processes both internally and for its supply chain, and it's intended to flow through the entire supply chain, no matter how many vendors or how many tiers may exist. And those processes are intended to detect and avoid counterfeits and keep them out of the defense supply chain. Our members will be the first to say nobody wants to sell a product that runs the risk of failing. They understand the criticality of the marketplace they're in, and they want to make sure that they deliver a product, if for no other reasons than for selfish ones. They don't want to have those kinds of actions associated with their business name. It's not the kind of business they intend to conduct. The department is well on the way toward implementing Section 818. We still don't know what that's going to look like. But whatever that is, industry is prepared to sign up for that. But conversely, we want to say that when we sign up for that, we adopt it, we implement it, we're going to do what the government tells us to do. At that point, it's a shared liability, because we've adopted what our government customer wants us to do that maybe not be what we thought would be the best solution. And in particular, because of the evolving nature of the threat, companies, we feel that companies are frequently in positioned to respond and react and be agile and nimble, trying to address those things. The government doesn't have a history of being agile and nimble. That being said, we're prepared to step up, sign up for whatever they're going to prescribe. In exchange, we're looking for a little relief and acknowledgement that this is a shared risk when we do that. The second provision that we're watching is Section 841, which has to do with the determination by the department in particular that they have achieved a fair and reasonable price. This goes back to the days of Klinger Cohen when we migrated into the commercial marketplace in the public sector. And the government decided it was no longer going to custom build things for the government marketplace. It was going to try and find them in the commercial space, and when they were available, it would try and get those things. Ever since those things have been adopted, we've been slowly eroding that intention with different requirements, new challenges for commercial companies who want to be in the public sector market. And this is one of the things we think is going to further erode that access. Commercial companies feel like the commercial marketplace sets the fair price for their product. And they think that the government should accept that. Unfortunately, because of some IG reports and some specific instances that we feel are very narrow and very isolated, the government has taken a broad brush approach to try and address a narrow, isolated situation. The result is that the commercial companies may have to share information that, number one, they don't collect in a commercial setting, and number two, they would never share in a commercial setting. Our particular focus is around the services that are included there, and we believe it's going to reach out and catch cloud computing services, cybersecurity services, and then the more traditional services you see in our sector, repair and maintenance, simulation and training, all of those things are offered on a commercial basis. And the concern is that companies may have to begin revealing information they would not normally reveal, and it's perhaps going to prevent some of them from being willing to get in the market and push others out. The last one that we're working on in the defense bill is called contractor compensation, and this has been evolving for the last two or three years now, where government supplements the salaries of skilled workers on contracts in the public sector in order to be able to sustain some equity with the salary and compensation packages offered in the commercial sector. The way that mechanism works is the government does a survey on the commercial side. They identify an average number of people performing those activities are paid, and then they create a number of what is allowable as part of the compensation packages on the government side. In areas like cybersecurity in our sector, we think that this is really critical for the government to be able to attract the best and the brightest from the commercial side and retain access to those people and their skills for the government portions of companies and the government contractors that are providing those same services for government customers. There's a debate going on about trying to cap this at a salary level. We've seen examples from the president's salary level to the vice president to the department secretaries. Right now, the proposal is set at the vice president's salary level. The question we're trying to focus on is what's appropriate. We understand in this time and this economic climate, the formula that's used, for example, was created in 1997. It's probably worth revisiting. It's probably worth revisiting a number of the factors that are in the formula. Those things have changed. Some of them probably are completely gone, and there's probably a number of completely new elements in contract compensation packages today. But we don't think that it is prudent for the government to eliminate or cap it the way that the proposal currently says, because it's going to cut off the amount of compensations that the contractors can pay the best and brightest, the most skilled, and bring those skill sets into the public sector to work on government needs.
Okay. We're going to pick this up after the break. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, back after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest today is Trey Hodgkins. Trey is the Senior Vice President for Global Public Sector at Tech America. You can find him at techamerica.org. And the Vision Conference is October 17 and 18 in Virginia, November 8th in San Diego. So if you are listening prior to that, go to techamerica.com, click on events, you'll find them both. Sign up, go, you'll get some great information. Trey, the last issue on our agenda today is procurement reform, particularly Mr. Ice's bill. Give me your take.
Yeah, Mark. There's a number of things out there that are being pushed as reforms in the procurement arena. And we're certainly watching them all very closely. One of them is strategic sourcing. There's a drive for more enhanced use of strategic sourcing in government acquisitions. And we're supportive of that initiative. We think it's a very appropriate way for the government to look at and acquire what are essentially commodity items, things like pencils, paper clips, paper, ink cartridges, toner cartridges, things like that, that are relatively consistent, relatively common, and don't require a lot of specialization, usually. Our concern about that arises when we see the strategic sourcing initiatives being applied as we get into the more specialized market areas where there might involve services, some customization, and other elements like that that don't fit neatly into those commodity-based activities. So we are supportive of the effort when it's commodity based, but we have concerns when we start talking about moving into some of those other areas. Some other challenges we face on the procurement side is the move or the trend in the acquisition workforce to use, or drive toward, acquisition decisions using the lowest price technically acceptable option. We've seen a lot of oversight pressure to get the acquisition workforce to move in that direction and to use that as a means of deciding what they will acquire. And this creates a lot of challenges. You see competitions where companies are simply trying to outbid whatever is the lowest bid. We've seen it in some of the auction situations the government creates where companies push in the acquirer or the customer looks for that lowest price without looking behind it to understand what is the reputation of the company offering the product or service, what is the past performance record. When you overlay issues like counterfeit, are you going to necessarily get the degree of assurance you need in your supply chain when you're simply out there looking for the cheapest whatever it is you're looking for?
Right.
So lowest price technically acceptable presents a lot of challenges in the acquisition community, and it's our hope to try and push that back a little bit. We understand there are appropriate places when it's acceptable and it's a viable means of choosing the vendor that would deliver the product or service, but there's a lot of situations where it's not, and we think that is tainting the outcome that the customer is getting, and it's certainly moving us away from the concept of getting the best value for the taxpayer versus, we have this move toward just finding the cheapest product without looking at things like life cycle costs. What are the ramifications on assurance in the supply chain and other elements like that?
Right. There was a wonderful video on YouTube regarding a chair. I think it's put out by Herman Miller or Kimball or somebody, but the chair, great ergonomically, about four times the cost of a normal executive chair, but it lasts about 10 years longer. Chairs might seem mundane to some, but when you get into what they can do for productivity with the ergonomic factor plus the longevity, it changes the equation. Trey, unfortunately, we're out of time. But I'm definitely going to have you back. Thank you for coming in.
I appreciate the opportunity and look forward to the next visit.
Trey Hodgkins, Senior Vice President, Global Public Sector, Tech America. Find them at techamerica.org, and please check out the events at techamerica.org. You have been listening to AmTower Off-Center, and for that, I am extremely grateful. Have a wonderful week.
You've been listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear it in its entirety on our website, federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off-Center, Monday afternoons at noon, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, WFED, your source for federal news now.